Monday, we had an opportunity to speak with a Dalhousie law professor about the Supreme Court of Canada and whether the convention to have Atlantic representation is important, whether that should continue. And Larchie Kaiser said, yeah, it should. It's been in place since just after Confederation, since the Supreme Court of Canada was established. Our first guest on our radio program this afternoon has done a little thinking about this, and he's also done a little writing about it. In fact, you can read about it. It was published on the weekend edition of the Herald. Supreme Court can be bilingual without every judge being so. And we welcome back to our radio from the Atlantic Institute of Market Studies, Jackson Doart. And Jackson, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Sheldon.
This issue, why was this important to you? What's your background made up of that you thought this was a story you wanted to take on?
Well, I actually, the subject of Canadian bilingualism has been something that's interested me for quite a while. And as you may remember, during the last election campaign, it was briefly discussed, the idea of making sure that each Supreme Court justice would be bilingual. So this is an idea that I don't support, and as I believe you saw, I wrote an article that appeared in the Chronicle Herald on the weekend, basically just going over the reasons for which I think it isn't necessary that we appoint bilingual people to the bench.
When in this country we talk about bilingual, it's French and English, clearly. We're talking about the Supreme Court of Canada, and there's been some discussion, some controversy that we don't have Atlantic Canadian representation. The Supreme Court justice from our part of the world is retiring, and the Prime Minister says, well, as you point out, perhaps the order is to have someone who's, well, fully bilingual, fully fluent in both languages. Why is that not necessary?
Well, I think there are three reasons for which it's bad. First of all, you're immediately shrinking the pool of available candidates. It could be that the most qualified justice, or the most qualified candidate to become a justice of the Supreme Court only speaks one language. Well, according to this criteria, that immediately you're going to stop counting that person. Second, I'm not really sure how relevant it is to the everyday role of a justice or to his or her vocation. I mean, I take it that bilingualism is a good skill to have. Knowing more than one language is good, but there are other things that are more important for judges to know. I, for instance, would say that having a knowledge of the different kinds of law that the court has to rule upon is more important than knowing French. And third, I think that there's kind of a lack of democracy, I would say, in trying to have ever more bilingualism in our high institutions. The reality is that less than a fifth of the Canadian population speaks both languages. And what we're saying by having an institution like the Supreme Court, where we say everybody who's on it has to be bilingual, is basically that four-fifths of the country is going to be excluded in representation in that way.
We've got Jackson Doart here on the line with us. He is a policy analyst with the Atlantic Institute of Market Studies. Do you know through your research, the three Quebec justices who are appointed, do they have to be able to speak English?
They don't have to, but as far as I know, they do.
Right. Given that, you know, this is about, in some ways, people are saying regional representation, others suggesting, well, what's the difference? You know, these are judges or justices who are put in place to, well, uphold the law and to, you know, make rulings based on the rule of law. So what does it matter what part of the country they come from? Is that doesn't come into your argument at all?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I think that the argument of the government kind of pulls apart in itself. On the one hand, they're saying they don't want to respect the convention that Atlantic Canada gets a seat, because they say, well, we want to open it up to more qualified people. But if they believe that, then they wouldn't put the bilingualism requirement in, which then shrinks the pool again. So it seems to me that in order to be consistent, you know, you have to open the field as wide as you can for the primary considerations. And the aspect of regional representation to me is one about history and tradition and the bargain of Confederation, namely that, you know, this part of the country was a founding partner in Canada. And from the beginning of the Supreme Court, it was understood and maintained that we would have a seat at this very important table. So, I mean, I think the argument for regional balance and regional representation is quite strong. bilingualism less so.
You know, given that we have a bit of a discussion going on about Senate, our Canadian Senate, and the fact that, the whole Mike Duffy case had to do with, you know, someone being appointed from one region who really didn't live in that region. So aren't there perhaps, you know, I'm thinking of former Justice Minister Anne McLaughlin, who was from Nova Scotia originally and was out west before she came back here. Would it really matter where they live now as opposed to perhaps what perspective they have from before?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Justice Cromwell was appointed from here, but was originally from Ontario. So, you know, these things aren't so easy. I mean, as we know, people move from one part of the country to the other for the sake of their career, for their family, for whatever reason. So these things aren't so easy, but it seems to me there's a big distinction between saying, we're going to give an air of interpretation or some leeway when it comes to the qualifications, the regional qualifications of one particular judge in one particular case, and then what the government is saying, which is that they're not interested in maintaining the pretense at all.
You know, given that Quebec common law sometimes differs a bit from the rest of the country, and some of the rules are different and laws are different in that part of this country, I guess in some ways it would make sense that we should have, you know, a set number from that region. But again, if it's good enough for Quebec, why isn't it good enough for us?
I think that's a good point. In fact, the Nadon case from 2013 may be cited as a precedent if parties from Atlantic Canada end up litigating to protest an appointment of a judge that isn't from Atlantic Canada. Because as we know, based on that case, constitutional convention can carry the weight of actual constitutional text in some cases. So while it isn't written that Atlantic Canada needs to have a seat on the Supreme Court, you know, in the Supreme Court Act in the way that it is with Quebec, if this were to go to court, it is possible, and it would be a strong argument, I believe, to say, look, the convention is there, it carries the weight of the Constitution according to previous wording by the court. We do have a right to our seat at this table.
Again, we're speaking with a policy analyst with the Atlantic Institute of Market Studies. I think I've asked you in the past, is this a story you pitched? Is this a story you wanted to tell, or did the Ames ask you to do this?
No, it was my idea.
Okay. Now, I'm just wondering, because, you know, I was reading some conversation last week on a Facebook page, and it was about the Canadian Taxpayers Federation and some freedom of information requests they had filled, and talking about the Irving deal, and some people said, well, why should we care what, you know, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation thinks or says? So I guess I should ask you, what is it about Ames that we should be listening for? What is it that you stand for? What is it that you hope to, well, teach us?
Well, Ames was founded to investigate and educate on issues of the market. Generally, people who have been affiliated with this organization believe that there is a dearth of knowledge about this, and so issues that are of primary significance to us a lot of times are fiscal issues, economic problems, but as we know, everything costs money, and everything has to be financed. And in fact, all of our policies do involve markets in one way or another. So in fact, the range of topics that Ames discusses is pretty broad. I mean, you might be wondering, for example, on this issue, why is it that Ames is discussing bilingualism on the Supreme Court, or in fact, the fact that we're potentially losing our voice on the Supreme Court? Well, all of this fits in with Ames in the sense that we're interested in the regional prosperity of Atlantic Canada, and we think that it's very important that in Ottawa they get these questions right, because representation for Atlantic Canada is a key part of ensuring that it will be prosperous in the future.
Well, the bilingual issue aside, I spoke last week with Senator George Baker from Newfoundland and Labrador, and Newfoundland has never had representation on this court. So in some ways to suggest that it's a regional representation, in fact, it's been New Brunswick and Nova Scotia from what I can tell.
Sure, and as I'm sure anyone else would say, there should be a regional entitlement, as it were, but within that regional entitlement, it should be on the basis of merit. So a judge from Newfoundland and Labrador who was qualified for the job should be considered just as vigorously as anyone else.
Well, it's a fascinating discussion. Jackson, thank you for being available and coming on the radio with us.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All the best to you.